Okay, welcome to the program. To kick off the week, we're going to be talking a lot today about teachers, as we've lost a couple of icons, one who played in the NHL and one who was very much a supporter of it. Also, bottom of the hour, we'll talk to Ryan Strome of the New York Rangers, just signing a two-year contract extension with the Rangers and avoided arbitration with the club. So we'll talk about him, we'll talk about his brothers, we'll talk about his family, we'll talk about the association through ball hockey with Mitch Marner. So plenty to get to with the Rangers forward here at the bottom of the hour. In the meantime, Justin Bourne and Anthony Stewart, good afternoon. I want to kick it off by asking both of you the same question. Stewie, I'll start with you. You all set?
I'm ready to go here. I'm ready to
go. Okay. First question of the day, and I'll ask you the same thing, Borny, in a second, so stand by. Stewie, are you a spermologist?
I think we're treading in the wrong direction here, so I will
Stewie, I'll ask you again. Are you a spermologist?
Continue.
Okay,
continue.
No answer.
Sure,
no,
yes. Enlighten me.
Okay.
Yes.
We got a positive answer from Stewie. Justin Bourne, are you a spermologist?
I haven't had time to Google what you could even be getting at, Jeff, so I'll say no.
Okay, so we have one yes and one no. Spermologist is someone that collects trivia. And I've always, you know, I'm sure no surprise, sort of been that guy ever since I was a kid, and I suspect you two guys were as well. And I want to start off today's show, and we'll talk again a lot about teachers, because Howie Meeker, certainly through video on Hockey Night in Canada, was a teacher. We're going to talk about Howie Meeker here in a couple of seconds. But we also lost Alex Trebek over the weekend, who passed away at the age of 80 from pancreatic cancer. Last saw Alex Trebek announcing Tim Stützle as the third overall draft pick of the Ottawa Senators in the 2020 NHL draft. And he was always someone that, the old saying about Trebek is, when hockey called, he always came. Steve Meyer of the NHL, who handles a lot of their the entertainment for the league, has used him a number of different times. His influence on the league is pretty huge, and he was always a supporter, always there to do things for the NHL. And we're going to play a clip that's made its way around the internet last night. You know, early in his career, he also did voiceovers for the NHL after the Stanley Cup playoffs were all wrapped up. Here is just a little clip of Alex Trebek talking about or narrating a video written by Brian McFarlane, by the way, of the 1967 Stanley Cup playoffs. Here's some vintage hockey Trebek.
The Chicago Blackhawks, the National Hockey League champions for the first time since joining the league 41 years ago, meet the Toronto Maple Leafs in a semifinal series. The Hawks are overwhelming favorites with a strong offense, led by Bobby Hull, who has just completed a 52-goal season, and Stan Mikita, the first player ever to win three major individual awards in one year. The Leafs, backed by the spectacular goaltending of Terry Sawchuk, a 37-year-old scarred veteran of 17 seasons, start to win games on Chicago ice, something they failed to do all year. Toronto, a team that suffered a 10-game losing streak during the regular season, are home to playoff perfection by coach Punch Imlach and King Clancy. The Hawks win two games in the series, but the Leafs' solid defensive play, relentless forechecking, and superb goaltending form a combination Chicago can't master. Toronto wins a berth in the finals, eliminating Chicago 4-2.
Okay, so that's Alex Trebek narrating an NHL video from 1967 documenting the playoffs. Also did it in 1968. And, of course, will always be known for anybody as much as he did, you know, help hockey and do a lot for hockey as the host of Jeopardy. Stewie, we'll start with you. Were you a fan of the program, Jeopardy?
Oh, yeah. I was the guy that, because I'd get one or two answers right on the show out of probably the 50 they asked, that I thought I was the smartest guy in the room. And I'm like, getting ready for Final Jeopardy. I'm going to get this. And I get it completely wrong. So I'll lose my money. But it was definitely an amazing show. It's one of those shows where, you know, you can just be on the couch doing nothing and you can always be entertained by that show. And Alex Trebek is one of those guys that just know, transcends his genre just as a game show host. He's forever now immortalized in pop culture. And, you know, he was on, you know, Will Ferrell made fun of him or did a parody of him on Saturday Night Live. You know, he's doing all the game shows and now announcing the pick for Tim Stützle. I think he's forever immortalized in the National Hockey League. So it's definitely sad. 2020 has been a big kick in the teeth with all these legends that we're losing. Alex Trebek, Canadian icon. Definitely sad to see him pass away.
I'm fascinated by the perfect diction that was like being a broadcaster in 1967 in that era. You know, like the way that Trebek narrated that Leafs video, the Toronto Maple Leafs and Stan Mikita. You really got to nail every letter. Because it's funny hearing how we talk now. I don't know what year it was, Jeff, that you guys decided that the second T in Toronto was going to be no good. But man, he sure said the hell out of it in 1967. That was great.
Yeah, no, I would always imagine, a lot of what it was like to play pro hockey, and you guys both did. And I think of, you know, okay, how many times would the guys have watched the movie Slapshot on the bus? And I always thought that, you know, there's a lot of downtime when you're on the road, when you're a hockey player. And I remember talking to Colby Armstrong about this once upon a time. Jeopardy is one of those shows that can, in an not just entertaining, but in an educational way, help you pass time. And it's player versus player. Like, it's almost like when you're with a group of people, it's one of the shows that makes it, and that made it impossible not to scream at the screen. Mm-hmm. Who was, okay, so this is a good one for you, Stewie. Who was the guy on any of the teams you played for, whether it's junior hockey, whether it's National Hockey League, who was the guy that you could tell was just in love with Jeopardy? The Cliff Clavin, if you will, of Stewie's hockey career.
Bar none, and this pops into my mind right away, is Jay Harrison. And he's probably one of the smartest guys to ever play in the National Hockey League, where I think he could be a doctor. He could be a doctor. I haven't heard from him in a couple of years, but I'd have to change my seat on the plane in Carolina because he sat right in front of me, and he's like reading medical books with the trainer. I'm like, okay, I'm out of here. I'm not sitting here listening to this for the next 5 hours as we fly to LA. But he was one of those guys that was just so, so smart. You know, we'd be waiting for our keys in the lobby, and he would just, you know, scoot over to the piano and play Tupac on the piano. So that's one of those things where I wish I was a little bit smarter and really paid attention to those things, because it's definitely going to help you after your career, absolutely.
Who was your guy, Barney?
Well, you know, I was probably
I was as much
in love with Jeopardy itself as anyone. Like, and even like after my playing career, my wife and I watched Jeopardy, you know, in our early days with dinner every night. That was like our staple, really. But I'll say I don't know if people know who Kevin Croxton is, but Mark Arcabello he's a Yale grad. Oh, yeah. He's someone super into that sort of stuff. Kyle Okpozo, he doesn't get a whole ton of, you know, I think he went to university for just the 1 year, so you don't think of him
Minnesota.
As a school guy maybe, but really smart
Minnesota.
Dude. It's the same dude as the overlap. I would bet the Venn diagram of the people who do crossword puzzles in the dressing room and watch Jeopardy looks like a single circle. Like, there are people who have interest in that sort of stuff and people who don't. So if they did crosswords in your dressing room, I bet they love Jeopardy.
You know what's always cool when
Jeff, I'm going to quiz you, Jeff.
Okay.
I think we'll have the same answer. Who is the Alex Trebek of CBC and Sportsnet? And I think we all agree on who this person will be. Who is
Ron McLean? Ron McLean going away. Ron
it's McClain, amazing how
no, can he read
he
votes?
Will see a play. He will see a play. No, he will see a play in 2020 and be like, yeah, that reminds me of in 1974 when this happened. And I'm like, what? How do you remember that from 35 years ago?
And then Ray Shiro pulled Bernie Perrant and everything changed right then. Or Doug Reisbauer, you know, raised one high on Bunny LaRocque in warm-up, and that man Ken Dryden was starting in game two, like, and it'll be like a reference that he's talking about from a game 2 days ago, and he'll draw a comparison to something in the 70s or in the 80s.
Let's be real. If there's hockey Jeopardy, we're strictly doing hockey categories. McLean's up there, but I don't know if there's many people I put past Merrick.
Like, I would say I can hang, but listen, there's a lot. McLean's here. Liam McGuire in Ottawa is definitely in that conversation. And there's like, and don't forget too, like, there's a lot of people, like, I'm part of this Society for International Hockey Research, and there are dudes, whether it's Paul Patsku, who I still think is the greatest hockey researcher. We're going to talk about him in a couple of moments as it relates to Howie Meeker. Kevin Shea is another one who, for my money, has written maybe the best hockey book I ever read, the Bill Barilko story, Without a Trace. Like, there's a lot of people that aren't on television or aren't, you know, on radio or doing podcasts that know relatively speaking, everything about hockey. I just happen to have a microphone. That's all. I've always made. I just happen to have a microphone. That's all.
I don't know about that. I've run into a lot of people in my years in hockey, and you've got quite the depth of knowledge. I'm like, yeah, I remember the Avalanche and the Red Wings in '96, but you know, other than that, I can't hang with you, Jeff.
Well, I'll tell you
what I had for dinner last night. I didn't. It was Mandarin. I had Mandarin.
Oh, nice.
Oh, look at you, salty boy. Look at you, man. Getting some salt in you. Hey, Stewie?
Yeah, I'm a little low. I needed some carbohydrates and complex fats.
That a guy.
So one of the things that's made the rounds, and we just want to play it because it really, in a lot of ways, sort of sums up the adoration and the love that everybody had for Alex Trebek. And I always thought that, by the way, one of his most graceful things as he presented Jeopardy was how he was almost sullen when someone got a wrong answer. Like, is there a game show host in the history of the genre that gave people a softer landing when they got something wrong? And these are, like, really smart people, too. Anyone that gave anyone a softer landing, more so than Alex Trebek, had that sort of head would move to the side, oh, no, I'm sorry. Like, a really gentle, soft landing. God, he was a wonderful person. And this is, you know, former Jeopardy contestant Bert Thacker thanking Alex Trebek. This is really beautiful. Have a listen.
The new champion, $20,400 for Bert Thacker.
Any family members back home cheering you on?
You know, here's a true story, man. I grew up, I learned English because of you. And so my grandfather, who raised me, I'm going to get tears right now. I used to sit on his lap and watch you every day. So it's a pretty special moment for me, man. Thank you very much.
Oh, that's really nice. I know, right? The shivers, the chills, the goosebumps, all of it. Condolences to the family and the friends.
I can't help but notice, Jeff, that we didn't clip the one where the girl describes herself as a fan of nerdcore hip-hop.
And that was
Alex,
good.
And Alex Trebek goes, losers, in other words.
Oh, losers, you mean. Yeah, no surprise, we're all single. Oh, losers. Let's see if we have that quarter category today. Condolences to the family and the friends of the late Alex Trebek. But the weekend wasn't done with us as far as losses go. Losses of great teachers. And Howie Meeker, man, Howie Meeker made it to 97 years of age. And it's interesting. I just mentioned Paul Patsku a second ago from the Society for International Hockey Research. So he does these Zoom chats. Normally he'll do sort of monthly meetings with old timers and, you know, this week we're talking to so-and-so goalie and just everyone shows up at a deli and everyone has a nice conversation. So he's been doing these Zoom chats and he's done a number of them. I've been on a couple of them and they're fantastic. And this week on Thursday, he's doing a Zoom chat and it's all hockey. Ralph Mellenby helped put it together. A Zoom chat on personalities from Hockey Night in Canada. And Howie was supposed to be on with us on Thursday. And I guess Ralph had just spoken to him like a couple of days ago and he seemed absolutely fine and was looking forward to the Zoom chat. But Howie Meeker passes away at the age of 97 years old. And the hockey career itself is fascinating. His story of getting to the NHL is fascinating. What he did is fascinating. And then he became, you could make the argument, the first real over-the-top personality that Hockey Night in Canada ever had. Won the Calder Trophy with the Maple Leafs, four-time Stanley Cup champion, Foster Hewitt Award, a member to the Order of Canada as well. Howie Meeker, Justin, passes away at the age of 97 over the weekend. Your thoughts?
Well, just such an influence in such a positive way on so many people. You know, Twitter can be a bad place sometimes, but it's in moments like that where someone is, you know, people grieve collectively. There's a lot of nice stories, including people who drove, you know, 500 miles, you know, to be where Howie Meeker would be teaching a hockey school. And there's just you know, he's a pioneer in a lot of ways. And what's, you know, what's funny right now is something that I would like to do in my own career is a lot of what Howie Meeker did was just draw on a screen, talk hockey, really yeah. highlight, you know, great plays and, you know, stop it right there and back it up a little is, you know, is such a part of every dressing room now. And I know he wasn't a pioneer with video the way that like Roger Nielsen is considered to be, but in the media, I think he was really, yeah, in the media, totally. He was one of those guys who wielded that tool better than anyone. I mean, maybe before anyone else. And, you know, what a legacy, you know, a guy who's blown up twice in the war, played in the NHL, a longtime broadcaster, a life fully lived, to say the least.
Yeah, and what I like about this, and when you're describing him, it says, oh, yeah, and by the way, he won 4 Stanley Cups. And I think for me now,
honest to God, is that true? I didn't know that.
4 Cups.
I knew right? And that's something yeah. that I strive for where, you know, when my kids look back on my life and my grandkids, you know, I want them to see the stuff other than me just being a hockey player and seeing, you know, me on a hockey card. I want them to see my accomplishments. I want them to see me on Battle of the Blades wearing makeup. I want to see them, you know, me on TV, you know, talking with you guys and seeing how I thought, you know, 50, 60 down the years down the line. So that's what I want my legacy to be as a former National Hockey League player. That was something I did. But with Howie Meeker, this is, you know, this is who he was. He was an analyst. And he was one of the first analysts to actually criticize players. I actually read that last night. Actually,
well, he wasn't
break down
shy.
The play and say, what is Tim Horton doing here? Well,
it's funny to hear it about years. Legend names like that, right? Like,
imagine if they had Twitter back then, what he'd be saying on there. But, you know, that's something I strive for. And Howie Meeker, he's definitely a legend and another icon. Absolutely.
So I'm forever fascinated with Bill Borilko. And I'm not in a minority here of anyone that knows him or the story. And we think of the, like, I'm fascinated by the goal, the Bill Borilko goal to win the Stanley Cup 1951 for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Montreal Canadiens. And that's got a Howie Meeker tie as well, because it's Meeker's line that's out there. So it's Ted Kennedy, Howie Meeker, and Vic Lynn, who both joined the Maple Leafs as rookies. And Meeker dumps the puck in, battles with Tom Johnson, gets the puck out to Harry Watson, who takes a shot. It ricochets out in front of the net, and that's when Borilko drops down from his point and puts it over Jerry McNeil. We can all think of the famous Nat Turovsky photo of that great moment. And, you know, Rocket Richard, his mouth is wide open. He knows what's coming. He can see it. And to me, it's the perfect hockey picture. I know everyone loves the, you know, soaring through the air, you know, Bobby Orr after Noel Picard trips him. But for me, the Bill Borilko picture taken by the great Nat Turovsky, to me, is the best hockey picture of all time, because it captures a moment in time, the split second before the event happens. Because if you look at the fans in the stands, you can see the puck, you can see Borilko diving, you can see Jerry McNeil falling backwards. You can see Rocket Richard looking at it. You can see all the attention turned to what's happening at the Montreal net, but it hasn't gone in yet. But you can see the puck, but it hasn't gone in. The reason you know that is because the fans haven't jumped up yet. The fans are still sitting when this is happening. It is, for me, the most perfectly timed picture in the history of the NHL. And that whole event was started by and kept alive by Howie Meeker. Wanted to get some Meeker in here as well for you to listen to. This is courtesy of our friends at the NHL Network on Sirius. This is Howie Meeker talking to Scott Laughlin on playing for the Leafs. Let's go to clip one.
Just to play for the Toronto Maple Leafs, I guess in itself must have been a dream come true for an Ontario kid like yourself.
Oh, it really was. We were playing in Stratford. And one day, the coach came in and said, Howie, I was working at the CNR shops, a prize job, 15 cents an hour, with Joe Klukasey. And he said, can you get tomorrow off? And I said, well, sure. Why? He said, well, we want to take you down to Toronto. Half day wants you to go come to their practice and skate with them. I said, I'll walk. I'll get there. And I remember walking into Maple Leaf Gardens and taking a look up the first time. I said to Kluke, I said, Jesus, Joe, you could put a lot of hay in this building. it was really something. It knocked on the door, and Tim Daly shuffled up. Hey, hello, you know, what you doing? Well, Dave Pinckney was the owner of the club and the Queen's Hotel in Stratford. one of the nicest men I've ever met in my life in the hockey business or any business. Anyways, he said, these two youngsters are supposed to practice with you today. He went and got Hap, brought him in, and he sat me beside Billy Taylor and Sweeney Schreiner, one on each side, see? And I got dressed there. And Kluke was between Gay Stewart and Doug Poile on the other side. And we practiced with him, and in 15 minutes I knew I could skate with him. I couldn't play the game with him. And on a scale of 10, I was about 5.5 and 6 all the years that I did play. Without the puck, I was a hell of a hockey player. With the puck, I was a Humpty Dumpty.
Played on a couple of really... I mentioned the one line with Vic Lynn and Ted Kennedy, and that was almost a reclamation project for Ted Kennedy. That was the first year of Howie Meeker's career with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And both Howie Meeker and Vic Lynn were both rookies. There was a 5-goal game that Howie Meeker had in that first season as well. In 51, and I mentioned the pass out to Harry Watson, Cal Gardner, also a member of that line. He was part of some tremendous history for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And, you know, one thing that we should never lose sight on as well is when he won that Calder Trophy. Do you guys know who he beat out?
For what are the chances we do?
Come on, this is a Jeopardy question here. Howie Meeker for 200, Justin.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun.
Gordie Howe.
I concede. Ooh, Gordie Howe.
Gordie Howe. Ooh. Here's more Howie Meeker, courtesy of our friends at NHL Network Radio on Sirius. Howie Meeker on winning Stanley Cups with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Now, Howie, 8 years you played for the Leafs, 4 Stanley Cups. Like that is unbelievable. You must have been pretty upset the 4 years you didn't win it.
We were really upset the fourth year we didn't win it. We won 3 in a row, and that was the event in Detroit about the third game of the finals. Gordie Howe took a run at Teeter Kennedy, and he was going to put him right through the fence because it was just right next to our bench. And Kennedy saw him coming and stopped, and Gordie went to stop, caught his skates, and went head first into the boards. Well, everybody, the league, the referee, the newspaper, the press, you know, accused Kennedy of tripping him into the boards, and we got jobbed out of the 4 in a row, but we won it again the next year with a hell of a hockey club. We won it 4 times. The only time we were the best team was the second time in 48. Okay, we had Sil Apps, Hall of Famer at center, Ted Kennedy, a Hall of Famer at center, and Max Bentley, a Hall of Famer at center. The 2 years before Max Bentley won the scoring championship in Chicago, he played third line with us and still finished about fourth in scoring. Played third line and all the power plays. And Hap would put them, if we were in a gasser and a couple of goals up, you know, Hap would, Max, go with Lynn and Meeker, and okay, Max, go with Ezinicki and Watson, and okay, Max, go with anybody else we got sitting on the bench. Usually a bunch of kids from the Marlboros.
It's Howie Meeker on winning Stanley Cups for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and that 51 team, I'm pretty sure that Howie Meeker was the last remaining member of that squad. I got to go back and double check it, but I'm pretty sure now that everyone from that 51 squad has now passed away. One more clip, guys, then I'm going to get you to comment more on Howie Meeker, either as a Hockey Night analyst, as a teacher with Howie Meeker Hockey School, as shown on CBC, or as a player and someone who was very influential in the game of hockey. Mentioned Bill Barilko. Here is Howie Meeker on the late young defenseman.
You know, Howie, you talk about Teeter Kennedy and how good he was, and, you know, you played with George Armstrong. You know, he was a great captain and a great player. Let me ask you, though, Howie, about Bill Barilko, and we all know the story, but when you look back on what kind of a player he was, I mean, how good could he have been?
He could have been a Hall of Famer, and I firmly convinced in my mind he'd have been a Hall of Famer because every year he got better. Mark, I'll tell you what. When you ran into him, it was like running into an anvil. You hurt for a week. One day in practice, I'm coming down, coming out of our end. and passing my feet. I dig it over my feet, and I hear tup, 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 you know. And I look up, and there's Brilko. And if he'd have kept coming, he'd have killed me. I run into him, and I hurt like you wouldn't believe. And all the guys on the other teams, you know, they never, never go down right wing against when Brilko and Bush was out there. Oh, God, he could hit. Oh! The only guy I could hit better, but not as often, was Ezanicki. Ezanicki, when he hits you, boy, he cold cocked you.
That's Wild Bill Ezanicki that he's talking about there. Some great words on the late Bill Brilko. As we talk about the late Howie Meeker, when you look back in however many years, what's going to come, Justin, to your mind first when someone says to you, hey, who was Howie Meeker, Justin? What's going to jump to your mind right away?
Well, I know it's not fair because it's not a full scope of the man's life and everything that he did. But for me, I will remember him discussing plays and doing analysis. And to Stewie's point that, you know, he was one of the first people that was kind of openly critical of players on the ice, that changed the way that sports analysis, particularly hockey analysis, has gone since. You know, mm-hmm. You couldn't imagine going on camera now and apologizing for players over and over who were clearly at fault. So, you know, I think he was a pioneer in the field. He did something that I want to go into. And so me personally, that'll be my strongest memories of his contributions to the game.
Stewie?
Yeah, and I think, you know, we'll be bringing his name up real soon is when the Maple Leafs win the Stanley Cup next year. Hey, he was the last member to win the Stanley Cup. So, no, but he was just a pioneer, just a legend. Playing 8 years in the National Hockey League, winning 4 Stanley Cups. But I'm going back to what I mentioned before, you know, Stanley Cup champions and almost near the bottom of the list, not to discount that, but just what he did with Hockey Night in Canada, what he did with the hockey schools. Just imagine now how many people who didn't even necessarily go on to a National Hockey League, but had great lives that owe it to him saying, hey, he made an impact on my life. So that's something that I strive to do, make impact on young people's lives. Howie Meeker definitely did that.
You know, you go down a YouTube wormhole, you can find a lot of the Howie Meeker Hockey School videos that were shown on CBC on YouTube right now, and scroll down the comments as well, and they're fascinating. There's a lot of, oh, look, there's
weak
my
ankles.
Dad. My dad. Well, there is that too. But some of them they're real cool. And the thing about Howie at that point, he really fell in love with European hockey. And he was, you know, trying to escape away from the traditional Canadian hockey of, you know, club him over the head and physical hockey. It was skating and passing and shooting for Howie nonstop, which was the salmon swimming upstream, as you guys well know, in conversations around what makes a hockey player successful at that time in that era. Condolences to the family and the friends of Howie Meeker, same of Alex Trebek. We will pause and come back with Ryan Strome of the New York Rangers, a new contract in the hip pocket. Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday starting at noon. It's Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. We're standing by for Ryan Strome, who signs a contract with the Rangers. So he is back in NYC where he's, enjoyed a lot of success. 2-year contract extension, avoids arbitration, which we know is always better. If it doesn't have to go, right, Stewie? If it doesn't have to go to ARB, don't let it go to ARB because those hearings can get nasty.
Yeah, and I've been sent down a couple times and they sort of sugarcoat it while they're saying, hey, you worked hard and, you know, but that's a numbers game. But when you go into arbitration, they basically tell you what you've been having nightmares about, telling you how bad you are, how late you are, how drunk you are sometimes. That's what I've heard over the years. So it's definitely, I recommend if you can get a deal done beforehand, please do so.
It's got to be such a weird dynamic in the, like, I've always wanted to be in an arbitration hearing, Justin. I think it would make...
Sorry, Jeff, I'm laughing at how hyper-specific Stewie's experience was.
I didn't go to ARB. I never went to ARB.
Oh, okay, all right.
We've heard all the stories about, you know, making players cry in arbitration. And, you know, Berkey's told us a couple of different times here on this radio show and elsewhere about going to arbitration. The only time he was taken to ARB by Brendan Morrison of the Vancouver Canucks. I've always wanted just to sit in on one of these just to hear I mean, on the one hand, you have the team who wants the player, but essentially it's their job to tell the arbitrator why they shouldn't sign this player because it's just negative, negative. Like, you think the media is harsh. Hearing a general manager just read the riot act to a player in an arbitration hearing, to me, would be fascinating. How about you?
Is there not some way they can do this with the player not having to be exposed to it? Like, I understand they're all grown-ups and we don't need to spare anyone's feelings, but, like, can they not just make their cases separately and let the judge make a call?
How's your reason you're going to sugarcoat that? Nice.
Yeah.
Fair enough, Stewie. Yeah, they said your blood alcohol level is not always great in the morning.
Yeah, you know what? He said that you need to change your bartender because this one keeps over-serving you. So it's more the bartender's fault, really, than it's yours. Ryan Strome joins us. He is a Ranger once again, signing a two-year contract extension with the squad and avoids arbitration. Ryan, thanks so much for doing this. How are you today?
No problem, guys. What's going on with you? You guys are
well. We're just having a sort of around the table here on what arbitration must be like. And we've all heard the horror stories, you know, Milbury making players cry, you know, Berkey stiff with Morrison and his I'm sure you've heard some horrible arbitration stories as well. I don't know how to ask this, but like, what would it have been like in your mind? Like, I'm sure you think like, wow, if I end up in the room here, what's it going to be like? Like, do you have like nightmares about arbitration?
Honestly, not really. I think as a player and, you know, being through a few contracts now, I think you understand that it is a business. And, you know, although you're fighting over, you know, a lot of money, at the same time, they're still offering you a fair amount of money. It's not like they don't like you by any means. So I think it's important to keep that in mind. And since it's election time, a lot of people probably understand this analogy, but I kind of compare the player briefs and the team briefs as Fox News and CNN. So it's completely different. They just try to attack whatever argument they have. And they try to get you for wherever they can. So it's part of the business, like I said, but that's the best analogy I've been able to give people lately.
That is a wonderful analogy. Stewie.
Ryan, as a player, for me, it was really tough getting, you know, ready for training camp, knowing that it was going to be on September, the second week of September. How is it now training, you know, for the, you know, pandemic coming back for the playoffs and now, you know, for January? How tough is it just getting prepared, not just physically, but mentally for the upcoming season and the season that was?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's definitely something that we've had to kind of adjust on the go. I think when you have a trainer, or you have your skates, you kind of probably January, February, you start to kind of map everything out for your summer, even though you're still in the season, but you want to kind of get it all dialed in and everything like that. But honestly, I think coming back for the return to play in the playoffs kind of made me realize to do things a little bit differently. I didn't skate as much as I had in the previous summers. And I really focused on just kind of working out and staying healthy and getting treatment and stuff like that. And, you know, I found that, you know, the less skating I did, I found to be a little bit more fresh when we came back for the training camp and a little more eager. So, you know, maybe it was just a one-off, but I'm going to approach it a little bit like that this time around. I've only skated 4 or 5 times and just kind of going to ease my way back into it and, you know, work out every day and stuff still, but not going to stress too much about skating since we don't really have a deadline, like you mentioned.
Ryan, when you start up with a new team, you never quite know how things are going to go. And your experience there with the Rangers, like, things just clicked in perfectly for you this season. You know, just a breath away from 60 points and might have had a chance to hit 70 had the season gone on. What worked so well for you this year? You know, you'd had 50 points one prior time in your career, but this seemed like a different level for you. What worked to get you to that new level?
Honestly, I think you have to go back to the season before when I got traded. I think the last probably 20-30 games, I was after the trade deadline, we got rid of Kevin Hayes and a few other guys, Zuccarello, and there were some openings, and it was pretty much an opportunity for me to try to prove myself that I, you know, it's basically an addition for me for the next season is the way I looked at it. And I came in and I played really well. I think I finished with, I think I had 19 goals, and I had a lot in the second half of the year. So I think it was kind of more a year and a half rather than just a year. But sure. Honestly, I think just coaches give me an opportunity. I mean, this was the first time in my whole career that I played as a centerman in the top six. And being drafted as a centerman and an offensive guy and then, you know, playing a ton of the wing and then playing a lot of third line at Edmonton behind those two big guys, I think this is really my first opportunity to kind of take the ball and run with it. And that's kind of what I did. And, you know, I think a lot of it's got to do with my play, but I think a lot of it's the opportunity the Rangers gave me. And they trusted me in that role. And, you know, by 10 games into this last season, I was playing with an $11.5 million guy. So not the way I would have predicted it when we signed him. But, you know, it worked out pretty good for me, and our team had a nice balance when we split up a few of our top guys. And, you know, we seemed to work throughout the year. So, honestly, I think it's a combination of a lot of things. You know, confidence is a big thing as well, and continuing to always work on your skills. And I finally got an opportunity to kind of take those big minutes, and I was able to take the ball and run with it, like I said.
Take us, and we're talking to Ryan Strome of the New York Rangers. Take us back to March 11th, the day before the NHL shuts it all down. I think you guys were playing Colorado that night. Like, what are you, when you tell this story? Because Ryan, as you know, you're going to be telling this story your whole life of that night. You know, Rudy Gobert and all and everything, and players are going into the dressing room in the intermission and saying, like, are we coming out for the next period here? Like, what was your story of that night?
Well, I'm pissed off because I had about three or four chances to get to 20 goals that night, and I missed wide open nets left, right, and center. And it turned out to be the last game of the regular season, and I fell too short. So that's what I'm going to remember. But no, we weren't really, honestly, it was, I mean, you guys lived it as well. We were just kind of, you know, we were in the same boat as you guys. Everyone kind of downplayed everything. Like, our doctors came and talked to us, the league talked to us and said, you know, like, potentially like a flu-like situation here, maybe a little worse. We just got to be careful. I remember the first time it clicked in is when the Rangers told us not to sign anything for fans outside MSG and not really stop for the fans and stuff. And I found that to be really weird. And then we went on the road for a West Coast swing. And actually the referee is the one that told me before the start of the third period that the NBA canceled. And I was like, that's the first time it really clicked in. I'm like, oh, this could be our last period here. Like, who the hell knows what's going to happen? And weird enough, we went back to our hotel in Colorado after the game. We were supposed to go to Arizona and have rookie party. So we were all kind of upset about that. And then we go back to our hotel room. And in the morning, we got on the bus and we went to the plane. And at that point, we still didn't even know if we were going back to New York or going to the next city we were playing in. So we were literally sitting on the runway with all their stuff. We're like, are we going to New York? Are we going, you know, are we continuing this thing? We had no idea. So we were kind of up in the air like everybody else. It was honestly really weird. And especially trying to plan with the, you know, with the wives and girlfriends and people with families, it was like a really unique time. So, yeah, sure enough, we came back to New York and we were, we waited around the city for probably five to 10 days. And then we eventually got the word that we could go back home. So certainly really weird and, you know, something unprecedented. Like you said, that we'll probably be talking about for a long time.
I coach in your old stomping ground, the GTHL, and there's a lot of younger kids that have aspirations of playing the National Hockey League. What would be your advice for them to make it to the National Hockey League, and not just yourself, but, you know, you had, you know, two younger brothers that are planning on making it as well?
Yeah, I mean, you've lived it too. It's so hard to give parents and kids advice. I think that's one of the most challenging things, I think. For me, I mean, it's a little easier said than done because we kind of were the success story and we've got to play pro hockey and live it our dream. But I truly believe that you have to enjoy it. And there's so much, I mean, you live it firsthand now, seeing the parents and everything. I mean, it's such a business, even at minor hockey level. It's very competitive and there's a ton of money that goes into it. But I think the one thing you can't lose sight of, you have to love being at the rink. You have to love playing the game. And I think for me, I never really had to try too hard at that. I think it was always just deep rooted in me that, you know, I love going to practice. I love going to the games. Every Friday night at Etobicoke Ice Sports was our home night as the Marlies. And, you know, that's just the way our family was. And I think we never really got too, you know, into the politics of the hockey. We always just enjoyed it. We kind of followed our path. Put the hockey sticks away in the summer and played lacrosse and just showed up each season and just tried to get better and better. And, you know, sure enough, that mindset worked out. But I think a lot comes from the parents. I mean, my mom and dad, my dad was a very blue-collar guy, worked hard, and my mom was – is just the nicest lady in the world. And they just did everything they could to get us to play hockey. And it was a full family affair. And I think, you know, we appreciated the effort that they put in to allow us to play AAA hockey. And in return, they just asked for a good work ethic and a good attitude. I think, you know, a little bit of a vague answer, but I think that's kind of the, you know, the essentials that you need in a player. And I think if you talk and you ask a lot of guys in the NHL, it seems to be kind of a similar story.
You know, if I can just jump in as well, because you mentioned your parents, and I do want to mention, I spent a great night with both of them in Quebec City at Matthews' Top Prospects game, Chris and Trish. And I remember at the end of the night walking away thinking to myself, man, if every hockey kid had parents like these two, what a awesome place it would be. Like, you do understand, like, how spoiled you were having these two guys as parents.
Yeah, you know what? I think, you know, even to this day, me and my brothers try to do everything we can to, you know, pay them back for just the time, the money, and the effort. I mean, I remember my mom had to go back to work because I was in minor midget. My youngest brother was in minor Adam, so it was three kids in AAA, and just, you know, how expensive that is, right? So I think we always just appreciated, you know, what they did for us and their commitment to, you know, allow us to pursue our dream. And, you know, they obviously are great people, and I don't think you'd find too many people that have a bad thing to say about them. They like to have fun. They're down to earth. I think what you see is what you get. And, you know, it's nice to see them now at in NHL arenas, coming to watch the game, get to see them for 10, 15 minutes after the game is always it's always that same feeling, no matter if you're, you know, leaving the rink at Westwood or Etobicoke Ice Sports that we get now in the NHL. So it's a pretty cool feeling.
Ryan, something I wanted to ask you about a previous answer, and this is sort of a tough question to ask in season because it's usually regarding a recent move. I wanted to ask you about the positional toggle that was asked of you earlier in your career. You were a centerman. They put you at winger. We see this happen with a lot of guys in the NHL. They go, well, he's a center, but he can just play wing. Tell us what it's like when a team throws you in a position you're not used to, making that center to wing transition, if it is as easy as teams make it sound, that centers can just go play wing.
Well, I mean, I definitely think it's easier for a centerman to play the wing than the vice versa, obviously. Center is a pretty hard position, but, you know, being a centerman in the NHL is very demanding, I think. You know, when you're in junior hockey, you think it's so easy to play in the NHL, and then you play night in and night out against guys that are, you know, 55-60% face-off guys their whole career. They're big and they're strong, and they play these big minutes, and it's not an easy task. So I don't necessarily think playing the wing is a bad thing. I think it's a great way to kind of ease into things and have a little less responsibility. But, you know, as I've gotten older and I've experienced, you know, the highs and the lows of, you know, first line, fourth line, and everything else in between, left wing, right wing, center, I think I'm definitely realizing that as I'm getting more comfortable in the NHL, I definitely feel more comfortable at center. And I can feel it now game in and game out. I mean, I played a little bit of wing this year even for, you know, a few games at a time or whatever, and I just feel like I'm back in my natural position at center. And, you know, it's tough. I think as a player, you know, when you're one of the better players growing up, you're always a centerman. Like, I can probably count on one hand how many games I played on the wing from the time I was 6 years old. So then you get to the NHL, and it's a whole different beast. You have defensive pinching down on you, and, you know, you have to be in different spots. You have a little bit of a different role out there. You're not, you know, taking faceoffs, which can kind of engage you in the game a little bit. So, I mean, there's so much that goes into it. I think it is good for your learning curve and a little bit for that easy progression, but, you know, it's hard to take a natural centerman that, you know, for me, I think I'm pretty cerebral and kind of just feel the game out. I'm not necessarily the fastest or strongest or anything like that, but it's easy for a centerman to play that way. But as a winger, it's a little tough. You have to be a little bit more tenacious and getting in on pucks a little bit more. So there's a lot that goes into it, obviously. But, you know, looking back on it now, it's been good for my development learning-wise, but, you know, I definitely feel back home at center.
With Ryan Strome of the New York Rangers, Stewie asked about the GTHL. I'm going to ask you one about the OHL here. You're one of the best players the Niagara Ice Dogs ever had, and they still talk about you to this day around the rink. I want to ask you about one moment specifically. Connor McDavid's first game in the OHL. It's Erie versus Niagara. It's Strome versus McDavid. Remember that first shift? Dougie Hamilton just flattened McDavid as well. Take us back to that game and what you remember.
Well, I mean, obviously everyone knew who he was going to be and how good he was going to be. And I think at that point in our OHL careers, a few of us were pretty established guys. So we didn't want to get embarrassed by a 15-year-old. I think that's basically what it came down to be totally honest with you. I think, I mean, he's had his way with me and a bunch of guys now in the NHL. So if we got a little piece of him at 15 years old, that was the only thing we got on him. So, yeah, I mean, such a special talent. I mean, obviously everyone knew who he was coming in. I mean, to score like 60 points as a 15-year-old is just ridiculous. And, you know, from the first day he stepped on the ice, he was dominant. And always a guy you had to watch out for. But it's funny, playing against him at 15 years old versus, you know, watching him play in Erie as a 17, 18-year-old with my brother. It's amazing the progression he had. He went from, like, you know, he's really good. He's really shifty and everything like that. But, you know, you could definitely take him on or whatever. Then by his last years in junior, I mean, there wasn't a single player in the world at junior hockey that could stop the guy. So it's amazing how quick he developed. And like I said, I think it was more just me getting or us getting our chance at when he was 15 more than anything.
All right, get your licks in now, guys. Hey, this has been great. Congratulations on the extension with the Rangers, as Justin mentioned as well. I mean, things really clicking for you in the Big Apple. Thanks so much for stopping by. Enjoy whatever is left of this offseason, and look forward to seeing you back as a Ranger again soon. Thanks so much for this, Ryan.
Sounds good, guys. We'll chat soon.
There is Ryan Strome of the New York Rangers signing the two-year extension, avoiding arbitration. He is back with the New York Rangers. We'll step away. More Hockey Central in a couple of moments. Thanks for Ryan Strome for stopping by the program. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We're back here in a flash. Jiffy's helped clean out her prize closet and create four mystery boxes that contain all kinds of items like signed jerseys, photos, and more that you could win. Tune in during Good Show, Writer's Block, and Tim and Sid to collect keywords, then text them to 590-590 with your name and city for your chance to qualify. Qualifiers will be selected during leadoff and then immediately with $100 suspend at Jiffy. Fast and reliable home maintenance for less. Tune in weekday mornings and get ready to call in to qualify if you hear your name announced. Full details at sportsnet.ca/590. So we thank Ryan Strome for stopping by. We spent the first half hour of the program, guys, talking about Alex Trebek and Howie Meeker. Some other news and notes from around the National Hockey League. A small one, but it's a pretty big name in hockey. Ulf Samuelsson is now in as assistant coach with the Florida Panthers, as Justin Joel Quenneville gets the band back together from Chicago.
Yeah, I also love the idea that we want to get a little bit tougher, and they're like, bring in Ulf Samuelsson. It's like, he doesn't play anymore, but maybe he can influence some of those guys to play more like Radko Gudas, their most recent pickup.
Ulf is in, Stewie, in Florida.
Yeah, that was great. It's a great pickup. It's good seeing older players get back into the game. But I was going to talk about my story with regards to how I turned from a centerman to a winger.
Do it.
Just listening to Ryan Strome talk about it. I played center my whole entire career up until my draft year in the National Hockey League in Kingston. And Larry Mavity called me into his office one day and he said, Stewie, I just got off the phone with Central Scouting and they said, if you want to play in the NHL, you have to be a winger. So I guess you're a winger now. And I was like, okay. So I walked out of the, I walked in the office a centerman. I walked out of the office a winger in the middle of the season.
That's literally the end of the story, by the way, Jeff. Then he was a winger from then on.
But what a weird, I mean, okay, so that's Larry Mavity. So he's, you know, this is Kingston Frontenacs of the OHL. Is it his job to get you ready for the NHL, or is it to help the Kingston Frontenacs win hockey games?
A lot of successful players play for Larry Mavity, but the one thing is, what Larry says, you listen to it and you just do it.
Okay, so how many? Okay, I mean, like a couple of seconds. How many players have you changed? Oh yeah, you're a right winger. No, you're a center now. Oh, you're a lefty. Yeah, now you're a left winger.
I go the Wendell Clark approach. You're a forward.